The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Second hour of a numbers game presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander today. Let's welcome in our next guest, Mike Pritchard. Nice enough to give us some time. VSiN host at MI Pritchard. Mike, I haven't actually talked to you for a while. How you been, bud?
I've been great. I know it's been a minute. JBT, great to talk with you. You've been busy with the NBA, the association, calendar year discussion, I hear all of a sudden.
Dude, it is. And actually, Kelly and I were just talking about this. I'm going to start writing the NBA guide here, I think, in like 2 days because it's right. It's July, August, September, and then October's here and the NBA season starts. So the association is doing its best to do what the NFL does, which is at the very least be in the picture for almost every single month of the year. Which is, I think they're doing a pretty decent job at it. But let's talk about your sport, the National Football League. So I wanted to bring up some breaking news that we've had over the last 12 to 24 hours. The first of which is the funny stuff. Hard Knocks, they officially announced today. It is going to be the New York Jets. Your thoughts, you in, you out, you going to watch?
You know what? It's only like five episodes or something like that, right? And so like right when you get into it or right when you think it's going to get juicy or something's about to happen, it's going to go away, you know? So I might tune in for the first episode. It's run its course, to be honest with you guys. I mean, it's not the same what it used to be, the insider view or the inside of training camp. It's just not the same, right? And so training camp's a country club now anyway. So it's not that intriguing to me. I don't think it's a curse anymore either. So I think the Jets would be okay if anybody's worried about that from a betting standpoint.
It's funny. I was going to ask you, do you get PTSD like watching it? But you're actually right. You probably watch that and go, wow, I wish I had that when I was playing.
Well, actually, we would have won some awards back in the Hot Atlanta days.
Yeah.
If Hard Knocks would have been in our training camp. Yeah, absolutely. We would have won some type of awards. I know they won some Emmys. But we would have won. I don't know. I mean, just name an award when it comes to content. We would have provided a great deal of content back in the day.
All right. So the other news, and this is the more serious stuff. This comes down later in the afternoon yesterday. So Alvin Kamara Tuesday put a no contest to a lesser misdemeanor charge of breach of peace for an indictment that took place in Las Vegas that was here back in 2022 around the Pro Bowl. So my question is, because there's just like a little line that's thrown into some of these reports. It's like Kamara remains subject to potential discipline by the NFL. Are we sure? Like, you know, look, you go and get Derek Carr. We know about the upgrades. They're the favorite to win the division. So are we sure that Kamara's not missing any time at all here this season? Pritchard, I mean, it's been almost a year now. Like, we're sitting here waiting or over a year about some sort of discipline. What are we expecting at the very least for Kamara? Could he miss some time, you think?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, a lot of times the NFL will wait until the legal process takes place and certainly kind of resolves itself. And I think when you enter a no contest plea, okay, you're trying to get through the legal process and face the punishment for or from the National Football League. Go back in history, look at the track record, what has happened from players who have gotten into trouble in terms of no contest pleas and those situations, you know, as far as suspensions, it could be four games. Who knows? I was thinking that it could have happened last year, to be honest with you, but they avoided that because of the legal process. But I think what this also suggests, too, is that Kamara would rather have that suspension sooner than later, right? You would rather have that suspension happen at the beginning of the year more so the middle or the end of the year, if you can avoid those situations. So I think they're anticipating, the Saints are anticipating that happening. And certainly Kamara that way and whoever is a backup and trying to get themselves ready to start the season. So it's status quo when it comes to stuff like this, to be honest with you. It's unfortunate because he got himself in trouble out here in Vegas. But I think the organization, if they're really set on making the playoffs, at least they have clarity when it comes to one of their premium players when you look at their offense.
And you can make the argument the Saints maybe did try to at least see this coming. Jamal Williams is the addition in the backfield for them, too, and sitting behind him on the depth chart. So that's a pretty good backup to have. So let's expand this out then for New Orleans. Let's just say, you know, it's like, let's say it's two games, whatever. He misses time. And I would agree with you. I don't know if it's going to be more than four games. He's not going to adjust the odds a ton. Like, you know, maybe 9.5, wherever it's shaded, gets altered a couple of cents, but maybe that's about it. But when it comes to Derek Carr and getting into the system and taking over this team, a loss of Alvin Kamara, what do you think that does for him if he's not going to be there at the beginning of the season?
Well, I think a lot has to happen for D. Carr, right? And so I've been doing a lot of research in terms of teams and stated goals. So, for instance, when I was a player, And she's trying to correlate that with the betting aspect of things for myself. When I was a player, our stated goal as an offense each and every year was we have to be at least 60% in the red zone scoring percentage. And that's touchdowns, right? Not selling for field goals, nothing like that. And so D. Carr, that's been his shortcomings. You know, you look at his track record with the Raiders, he has not been that dynamic of a player in the red zone where he has to pull the trigger or thread the needle or make a play with his legs. He hasn't been able to do that. And then so extrapolate that for this year, for the Saints. Last year or the last few years, the Saints have been around 52% scoring in the red zone when it comes to touchdowns. Is Derek Carr going to elevate that? I don't think so. And the teams that kind of do or able to elevate that or solve that situation are teams with strong defenses. Like if you're not, if you're not close to 60% in terms of scoring touchdowns in the red zone, then you better have a great defense. And it appears to be the case for the Saints. You know, I think Dennis Allen's done a great job, and personnel wise, it feels like the Saints can have that dynamic defense once again. But if D. Carr can elevate it in any form, get closer to 60%, now you're talking about a Saints team that potentially could get hot this year.
Do you think that's going to be the case? I mean, they're plus 120 to win this division. We'll talk about your Falcons here coming up at plus 215. Probably Panthers are 4-1. Buccaneers at 8-1. Are they accurately priced in a division that looks on its surface pretty weak?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, the NFC South up for grabs, in my opinion. The NFC North, another division up for grabs, in my opinion, from that standpoint. I mean, there's very few surprises each and every year. I've been talking about that ad nauseum, but I think in those two particular divisions, anything and everything could happen, right?
Yep. All right, let's talk about those Falcons then. Second on the board, yep. Plus 215 to win the division. Win total of 8.5, which to me is, I think, somewhat high for a team like Atlanta, just given the questions you have at quarterback. We don't know what Desmond Ridder is going to be. I think Taylor Heinicke is one of those quarterbacks that if you go back and watch him pitch and look at some of the advanced metrics, it would tell you got pretty lucky with some of the balls that he put up for grabs throughout the entire season last year. What do you make of Atlanta and the projections here? Because I will say at the very least, like the argument against my own point would be that Arthur Smith did a pretty good job with Marcus Mariota in this offense last year. 1 point in the first half, they were top 10 team in terms of EPA on offense. He can maximize what they have, and they do have a lot in terms of skill position.
Yeah, they do. They have a ton to work with. You know, I think when you look at Atlanta too, down the stretch, really, really poor in red zone efficiency when it comes to scoring touchdowns, just about 38%. And then defensively, you know, just not a lot of horses last year. But this year, they got more veteran on the defense side of the ball, some guys that with experience, they got to stay healthy, right? But I think they're going to love their style of play. If there's any elevation in this offense, then yeah, Atlanta could be where they fit the profile anyway, of one of those teams that can surprise. I'm thinking they could get to double digit wins, to be honest with you, JVT, with that schedule. And then any type of elevation with an offense in terms of scoring, I can see Atlanta really making a lot of noise. Just 34 offensive touchdowns last year, you know, in comparison. You had Kansas City who won the Super Bowl. You know, they had, 59 offensive touchdowns, right? So they got to get more productive offensively in terms of scoring in the red zone, scoring touchdowns. And Ridder, he's a big part of that, or Heinicke. You know, I think Atlanta and Arthur Smith will go any direction he needs to get into in order to get this team to the playoffs.
All right, let's go to the bottom of the division because this is the interesting part about this next year. I feel like to a certain extent, Todd Bowles being set up to fail because, right, like the quarterback situation is not very good. And the on top of it, Pritch, there is the potential prize of Caleb Williams. And it does seem that a lot of people, once we get to that portion of the year, are going to be, it's almost going to be NBAS where it's like, all right, let's see if we can maximize our chances of going to get this guy. And Tampa Bay's been at the top of the list for those odds, right, to have the worst record and whatnot. What is your expectation for Tampa Bay here? Is the roster really as bad as like the records and the numbers would indicate? Because I look around at a lot of position groups and I don't think there's like nothing here with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, you know, a lot to be determined there. You know, Tom Brady elevated the entire roster. I mean, even with Mike Evans and Godwin and all these guys, all these all-stars and, you know, the offensive line, that situation. But look at the injuries, key injuries to that offensive line over the last few years. Todd Bowles, too, his track record is not great. As a head coach, and then defensively, they're old. I think, you know, you had some players that wanted to get out of there if they could have. looking at the writing on the wall. They're transitioning to from a coordinator standpoint offensively, certainly that legend leaving the building too, like Tom Brady. So I don't know where their leadership comes from, to be honest with you, JVT. And they're going to fight with the Rams, I think, for Caleb Williams. I know people are throwing in Arizona in the mix, but you know, that contract with Kyler Murray, that's going to be difficult to move away from. But in terms of fighting for that number one overall pick, yeah, Tampa, throw them in the mix. And then certainly I have the Rams in that mold too, especially with the rumors about Aaron Donald and all these other guys.
All right, last 60 seconds. You mentioned you've been doing some research. What stuck out to you recently? What have you been looking at over the last couple of days?
Well, you know, comeback player of the year. I mean, I really like it's quietly a quarterback driven award. And I like Russell Wilson at 20-25 to 1. I know DeMar Hamlin, as soon as he walks on the field, that could be the narrative and that could be strong enough for him to cash that ticket. But Eric Berry, the last safety to do it because of a health reason, he when he came back, JVT, he was all pro and certainly a pro bowler. I don't know if Hamlin's going to turn into that, but certainly Russell Wilson can get back to his form and certainly the form that's needed for the Broncos to have a lot of success. I think he might have a chance this year at comeback player of the year.
You know, Dustin Sweetelson and I were talking about this the other day, Pritch. One name there, too, like that's actually going to have to perform to do it. But I think John Metchie III, I think, is going to be a pretty good option for that as well, given his story coming back. And he's actually a pretty good player. Like, that's the other part about it as well. All right, Pritch, good to talk to you, man. Hope you're doing well.
Hey, you too. Take care, JVT.
You got M.I. Pritchard up on Twitter. Give him a follow. We'll come back. We get back to guessing some win totals in the NBA as they were posted yesterday. We go to the Southeast Division.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A reminder for you, Going Fast does put lives on the line. Speeding catches up with you. A reminder by NHTSA. Here on A Numbers Game, I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin alongside. So, first hour, we did a little guessing the win totals. I think I got like, would you say I got an, I don't want to give myself this. This sounds arrogant. Did I get an A?
A minus, yeah. A minus.
Okay. All right. Not an A, solid A.
It's also just tough to judge, man. What did we do? We did a division with five teams and two of them were off the board.
Yes, but I got one.
You hit one right on the mark.
And that then was within one and then two on the other?
One and two. Yeah, okay. That's pretty dang good. Okay. That's all pretty right. dang good. All right. All right. All right. You ready for the Southeast there?
How many of the five teams, how many do we have available here? One.
We have four.
All right. Thank God.
One is off the board. That is the top of the division, Miami Heat, because of the Damian Lillard situation and reports and rumors and all that good stuff. So let's start with the Atlanta Hawks. Your team, my team, America's team.
Mary, Atlanta, I was gonna say that.
Atlanta's Hawks.
Okay.
Hawks. Can I say that?
Atlanta went 41-41 last year. Didn't do much in terms of improving, but Quinn Snyder's there. Market should still be somewhat okay with them. They're going to be in the 40s. I'll say win total 44.5.
Ooh. 42.5.
Okay, all right. That's okay. That's,
you got to like little, that, though, right?
Yeah, that's a little low. Given our expectations for them and the fact that I think they can win that division. And here's the thing, too. This is the important part about these. If Miami lands Damian Lillard, you would expect that Atlanta's win total, whether it be the odds or whether it be a full win, does get adjusted.
Yeah.
So even if I think that thing is going to, you know, even if I think the current price is cheap or the number is cheap, I'm going to wait. Because I want to see what the market does when Miami gets Damian Lillard. Because at the very least, it's not going up, right? So that's going to be something to monitor, too, for them.
It's a good – I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday on Hardwood Handicappers. But, like, that's something that if you're an NBA bettor, you got to keep that in mind this entire offseason. If there's a bet you're thinking about that's posted – if you're thinking about it, you got to make damn sure it's a bet that can't be affected by a Damian Lillard or James Harden move, and so many of these can't.
That's low. And just given the fact that, again—
It's the same as the Oklahoma City Thunder.
We're talking about, again, if we're going back from last year, only a one-win advantage, one-to-one-and-a-half-win improvement for Atlanta if they, you know, looking at that win total. And if you go back and look at the numbers for them under Quinn Snyder, at the very least, from the day that Quinn Snyder took over to the end of the regular season, they were the fourth best offense in the NBA. An offensive rating in non-garbage time of 120.1. I think they're going to be better with a full offseason of Snyder and what this offense is going to look like. That's one to circle right there for Atlanta.
Me too. I think that's absolutely true. I think the other thing to keep in mind, Eastern Conference, it's still tough. We talked about this in the first hour, but would you say the East is tougher than last year? If anything, it's easier.
Oh, yeah. No, yes. I would agree with
right?
that. Yes,
like, it's still the tougher conference, but it's easier than what we saw a year ago.
Because I think you can make the argument the Bucks are getting somewhat stale, yep, because they're just kind of re-signing and retooling a little bit and trying to do some stuff, but overall, mostly the same core. Mm-hmm. And we don't know about the availability of certain guys, too, as you move forward in the season, namely Chris Middleton. We just talked about the Celtics, arguably worse. And if they suffer one injury throughout the regular season, that's depth that's going to get tested. The 76ers, when everything starts on October 19th, could be sitting there without James Harden and without Damian Lillard. And then you just go down the rest of the list. The Raptors could be sellers. Don't really buy Chicago, running it back, essentially. Like, you can go up and down the list. The real improved teams, technically you could say, would be Miami, but the others are going to be like Indiana, Orlando, mm-hmm, Detroit, teams that are from the bottom coming up, right, and I think the top is coming down. So to your point, yeah, I think that is the case now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think, I mean, the Nets, obviously, but that we already saw that last year, in the yep, middle of last year. But, okay, Kevin Durant moves from east to west. That's a pretty big shift. All right, let's keep it rolling. Orlando Magic, next up, your win total guess.
Okay, this is going to be tough. It's going to be in the 30s. They won 34 games last year.
This is another number I'm frustrated by.
Oh, okay. Well, that gives me an idea then. So let's go 39 and a half.
35 and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be pretty good next year.
Me too.
That was a little aggressive on 39 and a half, but okay. They're going to be way better, I think, than last year. And they won 34 games, and they played a lot of good teams tough. You know, I've mentioned this before. They were, with 3-1 straight up, 4-0 against spread against Boston. Mm-hmm. They had that stretch where I think it was like from the end of December through February, they were a top 10 defense. They're going to be a lot better, I think, this year. And they won 34 games last year. What, there was 35 and a half?
35 and a half. Yeah, okay. Probably a good chance I still bet over on them this year. But I think I was hoping for, I was guessing 32 and a half, 33 and a half, something in that range.
Well, and look, like progression is not like linear, right? So it doesn't just go up. But you would assume improvement from Paolo Banchero. Mm-hmm. You'd assume improvement as a team just because of time together overall. It's interesting.
I think Franz is going to have a big year.
Right.
I think this could be a big year.
They're good, man.
It's good. That's a good team.
They're good.
All right, let's go to not-so-good teams. The Charlotte Hornets.
Okay, this is going to be pretty fascinating. They're probably they're not power rated as low as the Washington Wizards. The Wizards, by futures accounts, are the lowest rated team. And just using what we already talked about, Will Hill, is Washington's win total 26 and a half?
25 and a half.
Oh, 25 and a half. Okay, I already forgot what he said. So I'll say that Charlotte's win total is 26.
You guessed it even after you said it already.
Yeah. I'll say Charlotte's win total is 27 and a half.
31 and a half.
Really?
Yeah. I'm actually glad you guessed that because, yes, Will's right. This team is going to be better, but 30 wins, I still think they're right around that range. 31 and a half feels a little high to me.
It does. And also, I mean, and we'll tie in Washington because we already talked about it.
Like, there's only a 4-game difference. You're telling me a 4-win difference between the Hornets and the Magic?
Yeah.
And I don't buy that.
Here's something I don't buy either personally as we're talking about these bottom two teams. This might sound crazy, so you tell me if I am. Tyus Jones, Jordan Poole, Corey Kispert, Kyle Kuzma, and Daniel Gafford is not a terrible starting lineup for the Washington Wizards. Tyus Jones is a good starting point guard. You have, obviously, Poole and what he's potentially capable of.
Do you know how many shots? I even tried to look at, like, Jordan Poole and most improved. He's up there. The one that I was looking at was Kuzma's. We're trying to find a Kuzma number. Do you know how many shots Kuzma and Jordan Poole are going to put up on that team?
It's
going to be insane.
Nobody's going to tell them no.
Right, exactly. It's their. They have the free fire order now from head coaches. Like, yep, that is, go ahead and take as many shots as you guys want.
And here's the thing, and Will mentioned this, and people are always going to point to this when it comes to the NBA, which is, hey, you're going to tank, yada, yada, right? But my rebuttal would be twofold when it comes to the tanking thing. First off, there is no prospect at the top of next year's draft like Victor Wembanyama at all. And there's not every year, but what I'm saying is there's not like a clear-cut guy that you're really going for. And yes, do you want to get the first overall pick, whatever? Sure. But overall, there's not anything really that you're pushing for if you're a team like Washington that's going to be near the bottom, as it's projected is going to be the case. The other thing is, too, if you look at some of the worst teams out there, and there's always a team that is going to be bad and worse than you expect. But, Kelly, look at the teams that ended up finishing outside of the playoffs last year. Indiana, Washington, Orlando, Charlotte, Detroit. And in the West, Dallas, Utah, Portland, Houston, San Antonio. Of all of those teams, really, like, there's like Charlotte and Washington, which are abject disasters.
Yeah.
The rest of those, you can make the case improved and might push for a play-in spot next year. You see what I'm saying? So, like,
yep.
I don't know if there's going to be the concerted effort from Washington to actually do this. They're going to be bad, but, like, again, the core that they have is not one of the worst in the NBA. I'm not projecting them to win like 37 games, but I think betting under 25.5 might not be the cinch that many think it might be once you get to the point of the end of the year.
It is an interesting conversation, though, looking at that team of like the, you know, once we get the prop of fewest wins, right, of who those teams really in the running are going to be. I think Washington, you at least have to put on that list for right now.
Yes.
Washington, Charlotte, I agree with you those two, but I don't really know that there's a whole lot else to look at in the Eastern Conference, because I do think Detroit's going to be better. The Pacers, I don't know what you think about them, but probably right about as right where they were last year is probably where I'd peg
them at. I think they're good enough to make a push for a play-in spot.
And then in the West, I mean, we still yet to see, I guess, what this Blazers team is really going to look like, but I don't think I'd have them in that, like, really challenging for the worst record.
Mm-hmm.
Rockets, Spurs are probably still in that conversation, and Rockets, I think, will be a little bit better, but how much better, right? Yeah, I don't know.
Here's the thing, too. This is worth pointing out really quickly. So I mentioned Indiana might be pushing for a playoff spot and play-in spot. And one of the things was, hey, look, like, they spent money. They went to go get Bruce Brown. One of the interesting things came out, you know, when these deals get official, you actually get details on the contract. Bruce Brown signed that two-year deal. The second year is actually a club option, like, so it's a team option, for $23 million.
Really?
Yeah. That's pretty fascinating given the fact that, like, I mean, he could be on an asset, whatever it is. Like, he could technically be an expiring if you want to ship him off to a team and they don't want him. So it'd be pretty interesting to see what they do with him. The thought was they were spending money and they're pushing for a play-in, but if they are worse than they expect, there's a reality in which Bruce Brown, Buddy Hield, and Miles Turner are all ship them off.
And keep in mind, Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, Miles Turner's been on the trading block for like a year and a half.
Yeah. All right, we'll take our break. Let's talk a little bit more about those Atlanta Hawks. We got to talk to Brad Rowland down at the Summer League. Awesome job covering Atlanta. Get his thoughts on the Trae Young noise. And remember, you know, speaking of contracts, DeJounte Murray just signed a contract extension for some reason.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready for the football season with our NFL betting guide. It's going to help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL year. In-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, proprietary betting trends, and best bets on season win totals, futures, and props from our crew. You can get it as part of a VSiN Pro subscription for as low as $19, or check out our summer kickoff special. Get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Speaking of summer, 117 this weekend? Oh, yeah, baby. Going to be hanging out at the...
Are you kidding me? That was ridiculous.
No, I don't think that. I think that's the weather report.
So when I was driving back from Summer League yesterday, I saw 109 in my car, and I'm like, this isn't fun.
Is that the temperature outside, or that's your car, right? Like, that's always a little bit hotter.
So I did the wait 5 minutes and then see how much it moves, and it only moved like a degree.
Okay. All right.
So I think it was really like, 108, 109.
All right. With that, Summer League, OV, of course, have been out there throughout the entire week getting to talk to a lot of people around the NBA community. Brad Rowland does a great job covering the Atlanta Hawks, a pretty fascinating team, given the fact that they blew out the impending Eastern Conference champions in the Miami Heat, but flamed out against the Boston Celtics, and they're pretty talented. We got to talk to Brad about that. We started off the conversation talking about, hey, man, DeJounte Murray could have hit free agency, but instead decided to hit contract extension. Why?
One of the little bits of news in recent days, DeJounte Murray, veteran max extension, 4 years, $120 million. It seemed like a surprise, right, foregoes the opportunity to hit free agency. So what do we read into this signing? What went into it? Why would DeJounte Murray sign this thing?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise. As the summer went along, I got sort of murmurs that it might happen in a way that before that, I think everyone kind of assumed that it wasn't going to happen, right. Mostly on his side. It was nobody's fault because the Hawks were just limited on what they could offer. This is, I think oftentimes with negotiations, deadlines can spur action and so can, like, constraints. Mm-hmm. And the Hawks basically could go to Murray and say, DeJounte, this is literally all we can offer you. And Murray just had to say yes or no to that. And that's what happened. The Hawks just offered him the deal. They went back to both sides. He got the player option. But I think he wanted the security. He talked about loyalty a lot. He's definitely he seems to like Atlanta, wants to stick around. I think all things equal, he probably would have gotten more next summer on the free agent market. But there's something to security. Like, he's a guy who already had an injury in his career in San Antonio. He lost the whole season to a knee injury. I think locking in $120 million, not the worst thing in the world. And if you're the Hawks, like, it's kind of a no-brainer because it's below market. I think if they wanted to trade him, I'm not sure they do. If they wanted to, they could very easily. And as long as you could do that on your newly minted signing, it's probably a good idea.
So overall, obviously the dynamic, him, Trae Young, because I thought this was the weirdest thing of the offseason, right? Which was all of a sudden it's like, hey, the Lakers should trade for Trae Young. Hey, these teams should trade. Where is that coming from? Because from my perspective as an outsider, right, reading reports, it does seem that there's like this slowly growing rumblings of some discontent with him in Atlanta. What's behind that?
Yeah, it seems to be more on the outside than the inside. From what I have heard, they've never really had a serious conversation about moving on from Trae. I do think that at some point, if they keep hovering in this play-in range where they've been the last 2 years, you know, one side or the other is going to get a little bit sick of it. You know what I mean? But at this point in time, I think it's more just outside noise. I think once it got to it, it was basically the reporting that I heard was everyone's available on the roster except for Trae Young. So he's still being treated as their guy. He's their franchise player. I think, you know, he's a clutch client. He's a big name. L.A. always comes up because that's what happens. He lives in L.A. now, so you see him in Los Angeles. And this little thing is kind of that kind of gets said. But I think for now, until something changes, I've always been of the mind that for Trae to get out of Atlanta, he's going to have to ask out. I don't think that he's going to be a guy that gets traded because the Hawks decide that they're out of the Trae Young business. It'll be him going to the team, if that ever happens, and just says, hey, I want to go somewhere else, which is with stars. That's usually what happens. Like, no matter how good you think Trae Young is or isn't, a guy on that level of prominence, usually they don't get moved unless they want to get moved.
Well, I mean, maybe because they were out of the John Collins business for a while, but he's been around for a few years. I couldn't resist. I had to make a joke.
I understand.
All right, so let's go to this duo as a whole and what the team is. You know, looking over some of their numbers, when you look at them with on the floor together, plus 1.6 net rating, 116.9 offense, 115.3 defense. A little noise there because there's two different coaching staffs. Mm-hmm. So let's start there. What changed under Quinn Snyder once he got there? Because I like some of the things you saw. Fourth best offensive rating in non-garbage time since he took over. And obviously the play-in game where they look tremendous. What changed under Quinn Snyder in those last few games?
Yeah, I think that mostly it's a more free-flowing style that fits this roster offensively. Nate McMillan has his strengths, but he's not exactly the most offensive, innovative coach in the world. I think that as soon as they brought in Murray, I'm thinking this is not going to probably work very well because you kind of have to have a pretty open-minded approach to integrating these two guys who are both point guards. I mean, Murray's been playing point guard the last few years in San Antonio, and it's not just that position, but, you know, defensively, there's some limitations there. They're really small. And offensively, two guys that just have the ball in their hands all the time. But running a little bit more nuanced in terms of actions, having them play together more often than, like, your turn, my turn, which is what it was a lot of time under Nate McMillan. So I think that's really most of it. And also, this is a very simple thing, but Snyder likes to push guys to take threes. Nate McMillan is kind of an old-school guy who doesn't mind a mid-ranger. They took a lot of mid-range shots under McMillan. And they still took a lot with Snyder because, look, guys like Murray in particular, he loves mid-range shots. DeAndre Hunter, mid-range shot guy. Trae Young takes some mid-range shots. So they're not going to just excise them. It's not going to be Daryl Morey ball where they're never doing that. But I think Snyder's been pretty open that they're going to be trying to shoot more threes, play faster, and really get off the ball. That's probably the number one thing that he's been saying is, I want guys to pass and get off the ball. Like, no stagnation, no clear. I mean, it's the NBA. There's going to be some isolation, but they want to have a little bit less of that, more pick and roll, more free-flowing, handoff stuff, and just get guys moving.
So do you think with the course of an offseason now, with Quinn Snyder, with these two in that system, how much better is it going to look? Because that was one of to give you some full disclosure, myself and my co-host Kelly, who's not here with us today, is back in the studio, but we are, I think, closet Hawks stands. Like, we come in, we see this team every year. You look at the roster. You looked under Snyder, some of the offensive numbers. You see what they did against Miami. And you see that it's there.
Yep.
It just hasn't really been put together. So what's the expectation for those two in a full offseason with Quinn Snyder as their head coach?
I think they're looking really for internal improvement, because as of the time we're talking, they've not really done anything to the roster to improve the team. Yep. Now they're doing future facing moves, draft picks, future capital, clearing the books out, but all they've done in terms of like the roster right now is just take John Collins off of the team, which doesn't make you better. You can certainly argue that maybe they were due for a retooling, but that's a good player no matter what you think of them. So I think they're really banking on Snyder's influence to kind of just open things up, and I think the pathway for this team to be good with Trae Young with this roster is to be elite on offense. They have to be, because defensively, they're not going to be good enough to have that be their calling card. It's always going to be the pathway. When they made the conference finals run, they were a top five offense and like an average-ish defense. That's their pathway to being good. The problem is they haven't been that elite offense the last year or so, other than the half season under Snyder. And then defensively, they've been so bad. They've been bottom five, bottom seven, bottom eight, and you can't live like that. I mean, it's almost impossible to be a contending 50-win team if you're a bottom-five defense. Yeah. The Kings try their best. They did a decent job with it last year, but they also had the number one offense in the history of the league by a possession basis. So I think it's going to have to be Snyder installing a little bit more defensive principles, also just accountability, all that stuff. But also, I think they all know internally they got to score, and they got to score a lot.
On the point of defense, yeah, like I look at him, and I'm like, so you have DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah.
You got Clint Capella. Like, there's some pieces here that would tell me on paper they should be better defensively. Is it just the fact that, hey, look, man, at the point of attack, we've got Trae Young, who we have to try to hide in certain situations. Yeah. We're somewhat small in the backcourt. That's ultimately going to hold us back, even though we have some good defensive pieces on the roster overall?
Yeah, I think so. I think point of attack defense was their number one weakness this year on the whole, either side of the floor. And, you know, they acquired Murray to kind of fix that, and I think it was disappointing defensively. Mm-hmm. He wasn't awful, but he was billed as this, like, game-changer defensively, and he wasn't that, which is not a knock on him necessarily. Just kind of, he's still a smaller guard. He's bigger than Trae, but he's not going to be like this dominant point of attack defender like a Marcus Smart type or something like that. So they're looking at a situation where Trae, I think it may have gone too far about how bad he is. He's not good. He's really bad, honestly. But as far as the damage that one player can do, I think it almost gets too much put on him.
We swing too far in one.
Yeah. He's not, I mean, almost no one could be as bad as he's talked about being by some people, but they don't have all these, I mean, Capella and Okongwu, their centers, are their best defenders, but they only play one of them at a time. No. So you have this one plus defender. Hunter's fine. He's not a game changer either. Collins did a good job defensively, but not going to be a game. So they don't have this like great plus defensive talent other than their centers. And that can only take you so far. On the perimeter in the NBA, you got to be at least decent enough to hold up. And I think that was the most maddening thing watching them all 82 games. It's like they just couldn't stay in front of anybody. Mm-hmm. And Snyder recognized that. He was pretty upfront about it. Like, we got to be better here. They know it, but that's also something that they have to address, and that includes just individual stuff too. Trey's got to be better. DeJounte, all these guys coming back, because they know they can't be this bad. They just can't be.
We got more of that conversation and all of the conversation we played for you so far, too, up at the Hardwood Handicappers podcast feed. And if you like to look at stuff as opposed to just listen, the YouTube page, VSIN, which, by the way, has a lot of good stuff up there. I don't know if we've ever really promoted that. Check it out.
Yeah.
But we've got all of those in conversations in full up on the website. Speaking of the Hawks, though, it's going to be a pretty fascinating team, and don't want to give a ton away, but Brad did kind of speak to what we were hinting at, Kelly, in that might be some good, dare I say, it might be good to look at the Hawks once the Heat acquire Damian Lillard, if they do, to win that division. I don't think the gap's going to be that big between them.
Yeah, me either. I'll have to decide between a division bet. I might just go win total.
I mean, didn't they win the division by beating them in the play-in? Like, that's it, right? Like, that's
get. Yeah. But you know how much I love Dame. I love Dame. I do think it's going to – it might scare me off a division bet. But it all depends on the odds.
Yep.
I mean, how much do the odds swing?
I mean, last year
division?
We were getting, what, like 3-1?
Yes.
Yeah. And this year now plus 190.
Plus 190 right now.
We'll see what happens once and if Damian Lillard is acquired by the Miami Heat, but – you would think that's going to shift.
Yes, it's going to shift, but I would think they're baking that in a little bit already.
Oh, it is. I'm thinking like 10 to 15 cents.
Yeah, I would think so.
If anything at all. All right, we'll come back. We do have news in terms of shifting odds in one player's destination, and it's not Damian Lillard's. We'll discuss when we come back because it's a big one.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sports books, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms. Got to be 21. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. So we mentioned an odd shift in the closing minutes here. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander today. So the big odd shift, I mean, I guess it's numbers-wise, if you look at it, from 25-1 to 8-1, it's a pretty big deal for the most part. So we're all talking about Damian Lillard. But the shift has now started for one James Harden. So James Harden is now the favorite, minus 175, the Clippers. It's been floating around like minus 180. That's not the adjustment. The Phoenix Suns, you caught this last night, Kelly, early this morning. The Phoenix Suns have gone from about 28 to 25 to 25 to 1.
25 yesterday morning when I was typing up, and 8 this morning.
And now 8 to 1. No information that's been out there or posted. Just a shift. Now, I will say that the rumor had been thrown out there that they were interested in him, I guess. But here's the deal. That doesn't make much sense. I mean, I guess they still have a hole at point guard. So you theoretically, like, could your starting lineup be James Harden, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and DeAndre Ayton? Sure. And by the way, I mean, 5 years ago, if I'd have told you that was a potential starting lineup for a team, right? That's ridiculous.
But they can't, like, but let's start right there, because he's not going to Phoenix without DeAndre Ayton getting dealt, right?
You would think, so you would assume maybe it's a three-team deal, because you're not shipping DeAndre Ayton to Philadelphia.
Right,
there's no
right.
need
yeah,
there.
You'd have to add someone else.
So there's going to be some sort of three-team deal. And for anybody who's saying, like, money, apron, no, like, this is the last year. Like, the only thing that the Suns would miss out on is one of the exceptions this season. After that is when the second apron stuff and all that kind of really starts to kick in. So why not make one big push here and go for the expiring contract in James Harden? The other thing, though, is I think Harden, as part of it, does want to re-sign with the team that he gets traded to. He wants to sign an extension. So if that's going to be the case, then it wouldn't make sense, because Phoenix does not want Harden, Beal, Booker, and Durant on varying long-term deals. That's not sustainable. That's not viable. Right. So we'll see if that's going to be the case. Maybe it was just, hey, look, we took a bet on it at long odds, and we got to move this thing because of it. Maybe it was somebody with actual information. But that is the news here, is that they've gone from 25 to 1 to 8 to 1, the Phoenix Suns. Where will James Harden play his first regular season minute next year?
You're the resident Clippers fan. What do you think happens with James Harden? The other thing of note, it's probably just as notable. We've been talking about this with both Harden and Lillard, that the Sixers number shortened today as well. So yeah, that was like 275 or 3 to 1, goes down to 225. I 25-1 jump to 8-1, like, is probably just as important as that 76ers move. But like,
it's about a 3% increase. Let's see. 8-1 is about 11%, and 25-1 is, what are we talking about? 3.8.
Yeah. Do you think, we talked about this on the podcast, we both think that there's a good chance that Damian Lillard and James Harden both start the seasons on their respective teams, and maybe trades happen after that. What do you actually think of this list, though? Like, you think the Clippers are a real possibility of this happening at odds on favorite?
I think the Clippers want to add a point guard, and I think that they have been sniffing around both Damian Lillard and James Harden. And they are the only substantial team with real information out there, which is why they're such big favorites to land him. So I would say, I think they're definitely interested. I think the sticking point is whether or not you give up Terrence Mann, who's actually a pretty decent piece, to give up for James Harden on 1 year. And ultimately a guy who's been wearing out his welcome everywhere he goes. Like, we have now the MO.
Yeah.
It's go out there, play a year, be happy-ish, and then ask for your way out after a year. And I don't think the Clippers want to risk that. And in reading reports, that seems to be the case. I think they're the favorites, but it's more like, we'll give you some second-round picks and filler, whether it's Covington and Powell and Morris or whatever, and then we'll take him. But if not, like, we're not giving up Terrence Mann for that. I think they'd be willing to give up Terrence Mann and those, you know, they have future first-round picks that could be valuable for Damian Lillard, but not for James Harden.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess what's just interesting to me with Harden, it's the – because you're right. I think wherever he's looking to get traded to, I would expect he's looking to re-sign long-term there. And then you just talk about teams that, Like you said, okay, we know what his past is. How many teams are really interested in doing that? And you'd think they'd want to trade. You would think it would be a contender that would want to trade for him to add him this year. So I guess I kind of get the move with the Suns a bit, but man, that still feels lofty, like they're going to pull that off.
Yeah, let's see. It's been widely reported that James Harden would like to be traded and that the L.A. Clippers are the likeliest destination. Ramona Shelburne on ESPN's NBA Insider Show, whatever they call that. I was about to call it The Jump. Yeah, NBA Today, thanks. Quote, I don't think they're close on anything. Harden has spoken to Daryl Morey since the first trade request. There was a cooling off period. They've spoken again. He has still reiterated he wants to be traded. It isn't a demand. It's a request. That's a pretty interesting phrasing of Shelburne's reporting right there. The Sixers have said, okay, we will try to trade you, but there is no hurry to do this. Sixers understand here that they have leverage. James has picked up his option. It's an opt-in. He's going to be a free agent at some point. He needs to play, whether that's in Philadelphia or elsewhere. So I would think, we talked about this the other day, 76ers, again, the phrasing is first regular season minute played. You can't stress that enough because there are people who will bet this, and if he eventually gets dealt to the Suns, they're going to ask for their money. That's not the way this works. The 76ers at plus 225 is going – of the two, because we talked about it for both, I feel more confident that he's going to be a 76er at the beginning of the year than I do that Damian Lillard is going to be a trailblazer at the beginning of
the
year.
Me too. We talked about it on the pod, but I think there's a domino effect to it, right? Like I think there's a lot of teams waiting to see what happens with Dame before even considering something with James Harden.
Like, I'll ask you, Damian Lillard goes to Miami. Why does that change the dynamic between the Los Angeles Clippers and the Philadelphia 76ers?
No, it doesn't. But I think Miami's a unique situation. I think Miami, we know, are extremely interested in Damian Lillard. I don't think they have any interest in James
Harden. No, but that's what I'm saying. So, like, I don't know. What I'm saying is I would disagree that I think there's a domino effect.
Well, I don't know. Do you think the Clippers are remotely trying to do anything with Dame?
I think they're interested. I don't think they have enough to get him.
So I'll stand by what I said. Yeah. I think even the Clippers, if that's what you think their feeling is, Dame is, I think he's still such a special player that you have to try everything that you can. And until you know that's off the table, that's when you move on.
Okay. We should do the morning debate show thing, right? Is that what we do? We're not picking sides here.
I think it's an interesting conversation because it is your team. So it's like, would you like to see the Clippers go out and get Harden?
I think Terrence Mann is the fourth greatest Clipper of all time.
That's what I was going to say.
I know you've seen that. Yeah. I did a hit from Summer League the other day, and I got distracted because right before we came back on, Will Hill referenced Terrence Mann, and I was like, yeah, don't forget. People forget. The closeout game of the Utah Jazz in the Western Conference semifinals, when he scored 39 points and hit 7 threes, and I was at home slapping my couch and screaming, watching this dude go absolutely insane. No, Terrence Mann needs to go nowhere. The kid's awesome.
So I think that's partially my point, though, right? Like, the Clippers going for Dame, just like almost every other contender in the league, makes sense. I don't know that you're running, though, to go get James Harden right now if you're the Clippers. Teams in those situations, there's a massive difference between Damian Lillard and James Harden.
Yeah, I don't want to see T-Man go. argue with the fourth greatest Clipper of all time. There's not that many great ones. hasn't been a really tried and true history, and the fact that it put him in the Western Conference Finals for the first time ever, man, going to go down forever. It's one of the greatest Clippers ever. Fourth best. All right, so last 90 seconds or so. So we've hit on this. That's been the big shift in terms of the NBA. And I want to reiterate for anybody out there who wants to get started on this, season win totals have been posted over at DraftKings. So we'll have a write-up on that up on the website at VSiN.com. I'll go over those tonight. We'll talk about a few of them.
We'll do a lot more tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more on those tomorrow. And kind of. Here's the thing, too. It doesn't really have a big effect. But again, to reiterate as well, win totals are up despite the fact the schedules aren't out and the fact that we are not going to have two of the 82 games when these schedules do get announced. So we'll see. Schedule announcements do have some effect because you get to see travel and what some of the bad situations are for some of these teams, but it's not going to be the point where it should change your thought process on some of these teams, whether you're looking to bet over or under. But got to tell you, man, I'm going to have Hawks fever for a few months here.
I mean, at this point, it's just years for me. So yeah. Just keep it going.
Quinn Snyder looks like he's insane and he hasn't slept in like 10 years, but He's a good coach, man.
Oh, he looks like
he's gonna maximize that roster.
Like he was casted straight out of Wall Street,
dude.
The movie Wall Street in the 80s.
Like we were talking about that too. And people think like, oh, it's NBA July. It's gonna be here in 2 months. The NFL's ain't gonna be in like a day. It's gonna be ridiculous, yep. And we're gonna be here. It's gonna be insane. Speaking of NFL, check out the NFL betting guide up at the website at VSiN.com and everything we have to offer. And check out that summer kickoff special. Everything we do that would include the NBA betting guide, which I'm gonna get started on tonight. How about that? And we'll have that ready for next season. Coming up next, it's Lombardi Line. We'll see you.